knew that he'd scraped them like crazy on the forest floor. Before he could make a move, Patty lunged in with her stake again, aiming for his heart. Joss shot out his right hand and grabbed her wrist. As quickly as he was able, he used her momentum against her and pulled. As she moved past him, he placed a hard kick in the small of her back, crashing her into a tree. Patty swore as she made contact, but Cecile still didn't move. Grabbing a handful of Patty's hair, Joss slammed her face into the tree several times. She would never stop, not until he made her stop. Her stake tumbled to the forest floor. Once Joss had ceased his assault, Patty crumbled to the ground, her nose split and bleeding profusely. As she slowly got to all fours, she picked up her stake once again. Joss backed off but kept up a defensive stance. He'd clearly won the fight. There was no need for it to go any further. There was no need for anyone to die here. "We're done now, Patty. It's over." Cecile moved at last, timidly stepping closer to Patty as she gripped her stake in one hand and used the other on the tree to bring herself to standing. Suddenly, she pushed Cecile out of the way and drew her arm back before launching her stake straight at Joss. Instinctively, Joss returned fire with his own stake, throwing it at Patty. Joss's left shoulder lit up with a heat like no other he'd felt before. Patty's stake slammed through his shoulder, all the way through. As Joss fell to the ground, the heat became lightning. Pain. So much pain. As he fell to the ground, Joss looked to the right and realized how wrong he'd been. Cecile lay on the ground, Joss's stake sticking out of her chest. There was blood all over her pretty dress, but none, he noticed, on her mouth. He'd staked her. He'd murdered his baby sister. The last thing he heard before the darkness of pain and anguish overtook him was a scream, followed by Patty's sobs. 18. Visiting Hours. Consciousness tugged at Joss, whispering into his ear with the sounds of the world. Sounds of movement, voices, machinery. Joss fought it off as long as he could, not wanting to wake in a world where he had just killed his sister, wanting only to float in the haze of nowhere and nothing, and pretend that he wasn't the worst person on the face of the earth. Henry had been right after all. He was a monster. A monster of the worst sort. The kind of monster that exhibits no loyalty, no kindness, no love at all. It didn't matter that his action had been a fluke, a terrible accident. What mattered was that he had done it. He had murdered Cecile, and he didn't feel at all justified or relieved that he'd saved his sister from the life of a monster. Not like he thought that he would. Instead, he felt terrible that he'd killed Cecile in whatever form she'd existed in. He hadn't saved her at all. He'd murdered her. And now nothing would be all right in his life ever again. To his left, he could hear a soft beeping noise and the faint hush of something else, a breezy noise that Joss found strangely comforting. To his right, he heard the faint, filtered sounds of traffic in the distance. As consciousness tugged harder, he realized that he was lying on a bed, a soft pillow supporting his heavy head, his left arm aching slightly at the bend, his left shoulder throbbing with pain. The air smelled uncomfortably medicinal. Hospital. He was in the hospital. Of that, there was no doubt. As Joss reluctantly peeled his eyes open, he was greeted by the sight of a slender, red-headed nurse, checking various numbers on a screen near the head of his bed. When she noticed that he was waking, she smiled broadly.
"Well, good morning, Mr. McMillan. I was wondering when you'd be joining us."
"How long have I been here?" His throat burned from dryness.
"Oh, just about 5 hours or so. But the doctor wants you to be kept overnight for observation. Are you in any pain?"
As Joss shook his head, she turned his left arm gently to the side and examined his IV. When she was finished, she patted his hand gently.
"You're very lucky that your cousin was there when you fell out of that tree, you know. And luckier still that that fallen branch didn't stab you just a few inches over, or we wouldn't be having this conversation."
A tree. Joss hadn't fallen out of a tree. It must have been a story concocted by Henry.
How had he gotten to the hospital? What had happened after he'd lost consciousness in the woods? And why hadn't Patty found his unconscious form and finished him off? Against his will, two images flashed in his mind. Cecile lying on her bed, a thin line of blood running from the corner of her mouth to her pink ballerina sheets. Cecile lying on the forest floor, Joss's stake sticking out of her chest. With a gasp, he blinked the images away and met the nurse's gaze. "Is Henry here? My cousin? Can I see him?" The nurse smiled and walked out the door. When she returned, it was only long enough to hold the door open for Joss's parents. Joss's mom rushed to his bedside, her cheeks streaked with tears. As she rambled on about how much she loved him and how relieved she was that he was okay and awake now, she brushed his hair back from his forehead, stroking it a little too roughly. Joss looked to his dad for help, but even as his dad pulled his mom away gently, Joss reveled in the attention. Joss's dad reached across the bed and gave Joss's arm a light squeeze. "We thought we'd lost you." "I'm okay, guys, really." Looking between them, he was surprised to see the concerned sorrow on their faces. Guilt filled him for not trusting his parents to worry about him, but he couldn't help it. His mom moved closer, but refrained from manhandling him again. When she met his gaze, Joss was shocked to see lucidity in her eyes. The haze, for the moment, was gone. Her voice, when she spoke, was one of promise. "Come home, Joss. I promise everything will be better. Just come home, okay?" She bent down and hugged him, and after a moment of surprised hesitation, Joss hugged her back, ignoring the pain. Some pains were worth it. Once they'd parted, Joss said, "Can I see Henry? I want to thank him." "Well, of course," his dad said as he ushered his mom to the door. "Of course, son." Son. Because that's what Joss was. It wasn't a falsehood this time. It wasn't some play they were putting on for family and friends. His dad had meant it. His parents stepped out into the hall. A moment later, Henry walked through the door and closed it behind him. He moved close to the bed, his eyes full of concern. "Hey." Joss pressed the button on the side of his bed until he was sitting upright. "Hey." Henry shifted his eyes to the IV bag before looking directly at Joss. "You okay?" Joss shrugged. When he did, a hot pain tore through his shoulder. He gritted his teeth and said, "I guess. The nurse said you saw me fall out of a tree." "Yeah, that's what I've been telling people. I saw everything, Joss. After the whole thing with Kat, I realized you disappeared, so I started looking for you. When I found you, I saw you and that woman fighting. But before I could help or anything, she'd staked you." The next words he spoke were but a whisper of shock.
Was that really Cecile?"
"Yeah. It turns out she didn't die back then after all. She's a vampire, or she was." The image of Cecile lying dead on the forest floor threatened to resurface in his memories then. But Joss clamped down on his thoughts and did all that he could to keep them at bay.
"I'm so sorry."
Henry's eyes glistened, even in the low light of Joss's hospital room. Joss nodded his gratitude, for Henry's empathy and for bringing him to the hospital, despite the fact that they'd been at odds, for being his brother, the way he'd always been. "What about Kat? Is she okay?" Upon hearing Kat's name, Henry's jaw tightened some, the threat of tears drying in his eyes. It was clear to Joss that whatever feelings that Henry had had for Kat had completely evaporated since Joss had seen them last.
"She's fine. Being slammed against that building stunned her a bit, but no real harm was done. Apart from a broken wrist, that is."
Henry shrugged casually, but Joss could tell that his encounter with Kat had deeply troubled him. But Henry had a need to appear strong, and Joss respected that.
"Anyway, when she recovered, before I ran off after you, I demanded to know why she was trying to kill me and why she hated you so much. She swore you're evil to the core and trying to eradicate vampires everywhere."
Joss sank down some in the hospital bed. He furrowed his brow,
wondering how right or wrong Cat might be. With a heavy sigh, Henry said, "After a while, I just walked away, because I know there's good in you, Joss. And if Cat can't see that, then good riddance."
Joss could hardly believe what he was hearing. Not only had Henry not chosen a seriously cute girl over him, Henry had given him that solid glimmer of hope that he'd been desperately searching for ever since their freshman year. Hope that someday their relationship might be repaired. It was all that he'd ever wanted from his cousin. Apart from assuring Henry's safety, of course. "Please be careful who you choose as friends."
Henry nodded. "I will, so long as you do the same." Joss extended his hand, shaking Henry's in his. "Deal."
Joss started to pull away, but Henry tightened his grip on Joss's hand, meeting his eyes.
"We're brothers, Joss. We've always been more like brothers than cousins. Nothing can change that. But we can't really be friends until you open your mind and realize that all of one type of people are not the same. We can't be close again until you learn to let go of your prejudice. I need you to understand that."
Joss did understand that, but he didn't think that Henry had it right, exactly. His thoughts had been shifting, especially this summer, and now Joss wasn't sure how he felt about vampires or slayers. He didn't know if it was such a terrible thing to view Vlad as his friend, the way that the Slayer Society had taught him. He didn't know if mourning Cyrus or looking back fondly on his conversations with Dorian were wrong. He only knew that he did those things, and that when he did, a certain sense of satisfaction had come from them. So maybe he and Henry were closer than he thought to reclaiming their friendship. With a meaningful look exchanged between them, Henry released his grip and slipped out the door. As he did so, another man stepped inside the room past him, but Henry didn't seem to notice him at all. Joss, however, did.
"It's nice to see you again, my young friend."
Joss instantly recognized the copper hair, the curious smile, the sparkling eyes. He couldn't help but smile a little himself at the sight of his strange, occasional companion. "Dorian, what are you doing here?" A sudden twinge of fear entered him, one that wondered if the moment had come, the moment when he would take Dorian's life. But upon seeing Dorian's smile spread, Joss's panic was set at ease. "Not yet," he told himself. "Not yet."
"I come bearing a gift for you, a very precious gift, one I suspect you very much need."
Ever so slowly, Dorian brought his hand from behind his back, drawing out from behind him a beautiful blue-eyed girl with cascading blonde curls. She looked like Cecile, but she couldn't be Cecile, because Cecile was dead at her brother's hand.
"Jossie!"
The girl squealed and ran across the room, throwing herself into Joss's arms. Joss inhaled her vanilla scent and realized that it was true. This was his sister, but how? Cradling Cecile to his chest and ignoring the pain radiating from his shoulder, Joss looked over his sister to Dorian.
"How? How did she survive?"
"I healed her with my blood. The least that I could do, considering the things that I have done. To you, my boy. To your family."
A look of shame crossed his eyes then, one that Joss didn't fully understand.
"The healing properties of vampire blood are widely known in Elysia. One can snatch a person back from the brink of death with merely a taste. And taste my blood she did."
Joss almost asked whether Cecile was human or vampire, but stopped himself. It didn't matter. It didn't matter at all. Human, vampire, these were just words. Cecile was his sister, and that's all that mattered to him. Cecile had a small voice as she nuzzled into his chest.
"I'm sorry I tried to kill you, Jossie. Em was making me. She told me if I didn't that she'd kill us both, and Mommy and Daddy too."
He kissed the top of her head, stroking her hair. It was all right. None of it mattered. All that mattered was that Cecile was still alive. Dorian glanced at her, a look of absolute empathy on his face. His words came out softly, almost as a coo.
"None of that is your fault, little one. This entire situation,
It's all due to my actions. And my time has run regrettably short, considering what will happen over the course of the next year.
Joss was about to ask what Dorian had meant by that when Dorian turned his attention back to Joss and said,
I owe you an apology, my young friend. An apology that I could not give you. Not until this moment.
Though I'm afraid it will not be an easy apology for me to give. I'm not one who normally is prone to regret, you see. But there are two things that I have done in my lifetime which I deeply regret. And this is one of them. And for that, I must apologize.
For what?
It was me, you see.
The look in Dorian's eyes was haunted, unlike anything that Joss had ever seen him express before.
That night, I was the vampire who took your sister from you those years ago.
Joss's heart hammered inside his chest, despite the calming effects of the pain medication. It was Dorian. When he stretched back his memory to that night, he could only see fog in place of Cecile's attacker's face. But it had been Dorian looming over her, after all.
I took her.
The words shook from Dorian's lips, further disturbing Joss. He hadn't seen such uncertainty or guilt from his strange vampire companion before. Dorian's words came out in near whispers.
Though I'd been sent to do much worse, M had instructed me to kill every child in that house, to do what I could to prevent another slayer from being trained. I tried, and began to feed. But before I could take her life, I sent something. A presence. You, my dear boy.
The vampire in Cecile's room that night had looked at him. It had touched his forehead and said kind words. But the moment, the actions had terrified Joss and shook him to the core even these years later. Somehow, Dorian had made Joss forget his face with only a single touch. Dorian nodded slowly, agreeing with his silent assessment.
The moment I saw your face, I recognized you to be the boy from my nightmares, my dreams, my wonderful, terrifying visions. To my strangely mixed feeling of horror and glee, I knew that Cecile would be the driving force behind you training to become a slayer. It was I who turned your sister into a vampire.
Joss clutched Cecile to him, covering her ears instinctively as if it would protect her from the knowledge of what she was. His eyes burned with furious tears.
How could you, Dorian? How could you?
You are familiar with Vladimir Todd, but you are not yet familiar with the prophecy which surrounds him. The prophecy of the Provost. Even though you have such an important part to play in that prophecy, Joss.
As do I. In what way?
Joss's throat felt parched and overly warm, like it had been burned by hot liquid.
I must die at the hands of a slayer. At your hands, Joss Macmillan. In order for my vision to come to pass, you had to be trained. In order for you to develop the drive to train, I had to take Cecile's life. I had no choice. I am a slave to this prophecy, as are all who are involved in it. Entangled in it, as it were.
Dorian looked troubled, but very much like he understood that he richly deserved Joss's wrath, if that's what Joss decided to give him.
I had a daughter once, long ago. Cecile reminds me too much of her. Her sweetness, her innocence. I found that I couldn't bring myself to kill your sister. But due to the prophecy, I had no choice but to make you think that I had. So, in the end, I took her human life and gifted her with the life of a vampire. You've actually known the entire time, having witnessed my actions. It's been lurking in your subconscious these years, resurfacing again and again in the form of nightmares.
The horrific image of Nightmare Cecile's black tunnel eyes filled Joss's imagination. It was hard to believe that he'd had anything like that stored in his subconscious, The very idea that he'd ever feared his younger sister seemed foreign and strange now as he held her close. At the same time, relief flooded through him that Nightmare Cecile wasn't real, after all, and that now the nightmares would surely stop. Relief flooded through him, as did a question in his mind. How did Cyrus know about my nightmares?
My young friend, do you honestly think that you are the only person to whom I've paid informative visits to?
A brief, unexpected smile crossed Dorian's lips.
I informed Cyrus that a mutual acquaintance of ours was being plagued by nightmares, and that those nightmares were the result of M's meddling. I thought it important that he understand exactly where your fear was coming from.
Joss nodded. Cyrus had understood everything about him, nightmares included, it seemed.
When I touched your forehead that night, I'd wanted to erase the evening from your mind entirely, but at the last moment, I'd made it so that you would remember your sister, at least the way I recall my daughter so fondly. You must believe me. I had no idea that my gift would transform into nightmares.
Dorian shook his head, his soft words apologetic.
Joss believed him. Completely.
A thought entered Joss's mind, brief, fleeting, and wonderful. Speaking it aloud felt like letting loose a bubble into the world. It was dangerous, but lovely. It also didn't matter to him, so he wasn't exactly certain why he was asking it in the first place. Maybe he just needed to fill the space between them. Maybe he just needed to know.
Can you make her human again?
Dorian shook his head slowly.
No. That I cannot do.
Cecile's shoulders slumped slightly. She was trapped in this form, in this life, no matter what came from today.
Joss wondered if she'd been happy in her vampire life so far, but he was afraid of what her response might be. On one hand, he hoped that she had been happy since she was stolen away from him. On the other, he could only imagine how difficult the life of a vampire would be for a young child.
Cecile looked up at him, smiling.
It's okay, Jossie. I like being a vampire. It's nice.
Tears spilled from Joss's eyes. He brushed Cecile's hair back from her face, kissing her brow. He took in her features, silently thanking whatever fate had rescued her that night. He couldn't tear his gaze from her as he spoke to Dorian, his greatest concern.
What will become of her, Dorian? She can't come back to my family. My mom and dad, well, they wouldn't know how to handle it. They don't even know that vampires exist. What will happen to Cecile?
Dorian glanced over his shoulder at the door, which swung open on its own. Patty stepped inside the room, and the door closed behind her without anyone touching it. The sight of the bruises on her arms, bruises that Joss had caused, made him avert his eyes, despite the fact that every one of them had been deserved. They had been fighting, after all. Patty had been trying to hurt him, maybe to kill him. But that was past. Now he was just happy that Cecile would have a loving, protective mother figure with her for as long as she needed it. Dorian said,
I've made arrangements for Patty and Cecile to have a happy, fulfilling life. One away from the evil of M, away from the stubborn ruthlessness of the Slayer Society, on the outskirts of a small village in Romania. I spent my vampire youth there. They will have every need fulfilled and will want for nothing.
It sounded ideal, so why was Joss's heart breaking at the idea of it?
But there is a price,
Dorian whispered, his eyes locked on Joss's.
There is always a price.
Joss could feel his bottom lip quivering slightly. He fought to keep his tone confident. He had to be strong for his sister.
What is it?
In order to protect them, you must never seek them out.
Never. The word echoed through Joss's core. It sounded so final.
Certain vampires and the society to which you are duty-bound would surely follow you to your sister and Patty and do them harm. They must exist as quietly as possible in order to survive. You must tell the Slayer Society that Patty perished at my hand, and that I was solely responsible for the human deaths in Santa Carla. It is the only way. Joss looked from Dorian to Patty to his baby sister. Cecile smiled a small, sweet smile up at him. It was a smile that had been missing from his life for far too long, and one that he immediately locked inside his memory forever. Her eyes glistened with tears, and Joss couldn't tell if they were happy tears or sad. He just knew that he was grateful to see them once again.
Jossie, I don't want to go away. I don't want to be away from you again. But if I gotta go, I want to go with Patty. She's like Mommy.
Joss glanced at Patty. Cecile was right to view her in such a way. Patty was so much like their mother before the morning, before the medication. She was warm, caring, loving. Everything that Cecile needed. Sending her to live with Patty was the only way to protect her, to save her. He placed another kiss on her brow, this one a symbol of his goodbye. He could live in peace, knowing that she was alive and safe, knowing that by not seeking her out, he could finally save her. He had to let her go, because he'd do anything to save her, and sending her away was part of that. He'd do anything. He'd do it all. For Cecile. 19. A long kiss goodbye.
Careful, it's still hot.
His mom smiled at him as she set the tray over his lap. On it was a steaming bowl of chicken noodle soup, a crisp white cloth napkin, a well-polished spoon, a glass of orange juice, and one of those fancy hazelnut chocolate treats wrapped in gold-colored foil. Beside the foil-wrapped treat lay two pain pills on a tiny white paper doily. His shoulder still ached, but not nearly as bad as it had. Still, ever since he got home from the hospital 3 days before, his mom had been insisting that he take it easy in the comfort of his bed. She brought him his meals and seemed more like the way that she'd been before they'd lost Cecile. Smiling, warm, caring, present. Maybe the thought of losing her son had resonated with her, woke her up from the fog. Maybe his near death had saved his family, the way that nothing else had been able to. Thanks, Mom. Joss popped the pills into his mouth and chased them with a mouthful of orange juice. As he swallowed, his mom fluffed up the pillows behind his back.
Need anything else?
Joss shook his head, wondering how long that light would remain in her eyes. She hadn't been taking as many pills since he'd been home. Her fog seemed to have lifted, but Joss didn't know how long that might last.
No, I'm good for now.
With a pleasant spring in her step, she walked out of his room, leaving the door open a crack. After she'd gone, Joss picked up the remote control and turned on the television. As he flipped through the channels, he thought his only option for entertainment was a pain medication-induced nap, but then he stumbled on an old episode of The Twilight Zone. As he watched the evil little boy wish someone into the cornfield, his bedroom window slid open and Kat hopped inside. His heart beat faster upon seeing her, and he couldn't help but wonder how she'd managed to get up to the second story of his house.
In case you're wondering, I climbed the rose trellis.
She held up her hands as if to show him that she'd come unarmed.
Don't worry. I'm not here to start anything. Dorian told me everything. About Cyrus, about you. I'm not mad anymore. I just wanted my dad back, you know? And then things kind of spiraled out of control. I'd convinced myself that killing Henry would somehow, I don't know, hurt you like I couldn't seem to hurt you otherwise. After all, a regular human is no match for a Slayer, you know?
Relief flooded through him. Or maybe it was his pain medication kicking in. I do know. You wanted Cyrus back the same way that I wanted Cecile back.
Only you got Cecile back.
She walked across the room and took a seat on the end of his bed, shrugging sadly.
Well, kinda.
It had been horrible saying goodbye to his sister, but Joss comforted himself with knowing that he'd done the right thing in the end. As he met Kat's eyes, he said,
We both lost our families due to vampires and Slayer's cat. We're both humans, trapped in the middle of their conflict. Cat sighed. It sucks. It did, royally. Where will you go now? What will you do? My aunt and two cousins have a place in this town called Stockerton. They've asked me to stay with them, so I guess that's where I'll be for a while.
Her gaze fell to the tray perched over his lap.
She reached out and took his chocolate treat. She unwrapped it and popped it into her mouth. And only then did Joss have a real craving for chocolate.
It's weird, but I'll miss you.
He meant what he was saying. He'd miss Kat. He'd miss her presence in his life. She'd been a strange constant for him.
After she swallowed the mouthful of chocolate, Kat smirked at him.
Don't worry, I'll text you.
They laughed heartily, and Joss barely noticed that Kat had stood and approached the head end of his bed. He did, however, notice when she pressed her lips to his in a kiss. Her lips were soft and sweet. Her kiss had been unexpected. But the act didn't make him think about any feelings that he might have for Kat. It made him think about Meredith and how very much he missed her. He thought that maybe he might one day fall deeply in love with Meredith, if given the chance. And maybe if he was presented with a miracle of sorts, Meredith Brookstone might fall deeply in love with him. It was a pleasant daydream, and one that Kat's kiss had sent him spiraling into heart first. As they parted, ending the kiss, Kat merely smiled at him. He touched his fingertips to his lips and looked at her.
What was that for? I just never did it before, and I wanted to.
The kiss didn't change the way he felt about Kat. They were friends, just friends. But it did give him the sense that Kat thought that she would never see him again. Thinking about it, he felt the same way. This was it. This was goodbye. She hopped back out the window then. Out the window and out of his life. Maybe forever. Joss wondered if he'd ever see her again, or if they were just thinking the worst for no good reason. It wouldn't be the first time. 20. Breaking the Seal. Joss had just scurried across the castle battlement with a giant spiked mace in his left hand and a 6-foot-long sword in his right, sweat dripping from his brow, his heart thumping loudly in his ears. Behind him was a scourge of angry orcs and their fearless leader, Henry, closing in. The sky above was black with a million arrows flying toward Joss. As he reached the end of the battlement, he stretched his arm out, wrapping his fingers around the metal ring on the door. He yanked the door open and hurried inside, slamming it behind him in a triumphant move, blocking Henry and his horde outside, the sound of arrows hitting the door like 1,000 fists knocking. He turned around and there it was, placed atop a stone pedestal and glowing, gold sparkles fluttering outward from what would soon be his prize. Joss reached out, his fingers just inches, just moments from grasping the golden heart of Nictu in his hands. He was there. He'd won. Strangely, one of the smaller golden sparkles landed on the back of Joss's hand. As he watched, it grew and morphed until the sparkle wasn't a sparkle anymore at all, but a tiny fairy creature. It perched on his hand, a grin spreading across its youthful face. Then it pointed a tiny, innocent-looking finger at Joss, and his head exploded into 1 billion pieces. Game over. With a gory explosion and amazing graphics, Joss had just lost another round of World of Feycraft, the quest for the Golden Heart of Nictu. Henry burst into a fit of laughter, dropping his Xbox 360 controller onto his lap.
You suck so bad at this!
Joss set his controller on the nightstand, sighing in frustration. He'd never beaten Henry at a video game, not even once. He was beginning to think that it couldn't be done. Yeah, well, that's what happens when you're too busy in actual life to kill fairies and orcs in your fictional one. Though his laughter died down, the grin on his face wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. Henry turned off the console and set his controller on top.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, dude.
It was nice that his dad had allowed Henry to hook the Xbox up in Joss's room, so that Joss had something to do in between reading and resting and waiting for the hole in his shoulder to close.
and it was even nicer that he and Henry seemed to be getting along so well. Since he'd been home, things between them had been like the old days, before slayers and vampires and that whole mess had come between the two cousins. Things had been normal. Fun, even.
I'm so hungry right now. Kicking your butt really builds up an appetite. Henry stood, his grin still present, and headed for the door. You want me to make you a sandwich or something?
Recalling the kitchen monstrosities that his cousin had constructed in the past, Joss hesitated to say yes. But the look on Henry's face, so eager to help, so happy to be hanging out with him, made him relent, despite his taste buds' protest.
Sure, just no Skittles this time, okay?
Henry snapped his fingers and pointed at Joss on his way out the door.
You got it. One ham and Doritos sandwich, extra pickles, extra mayonnaise, hold the Skittles.
A worried crease briefly formed on Joss's brow then, but it didn't last.
And two Pepsis.
At least he'd have something to wash the taste out of his mouth. When the door closed behind Henry, his thoughts immediately shifted to the FedEx envelope in the drawer of his nightstand. His mom had brought it to him this morning, along with a plate full of scrambled eggs and crisp bacon, but Joss hadn't dared to open it just yet. The white envelope had the sender's address as that of his uncle Abraham, but he knew who the letter was really from. It was from the Slayer Society, likely notifying him of his next assignment. Only Joss wasn't sure if he really wanted to go on that next assignment, so he hadn't yet opened the envelope, trying as hard as he could to delay the inevitable. Finally, with a moment alone to examine it, Joss pulled open the drawer and withdrew the white envelope. He turned it over in his hands, hesitating briefly before tearing it open. Once it was open, he turned it on its end, dropping its contents into the palm of his other hand. It took him more than a moment to look at what the society had sent to him. When he looked down, he saw a small square piece of parchment. It was held closed with a burgundy wax seal which bore the initials SS. His orders, as he'd expected, had arrived. He ran a thumb over the seal. His thoughts on everything that had happened this summer. Cyrus, Cat, Cecile, every moment had felt so big to him, so life-changing. And his life had been changed. Forever. What's more, he felt very much like his mind had been changed as well. About whether or not all vampires were evil. And he wasn't certain that he wanted to interact with his fellow slayers until he was more confident in his thought process. But the letter, and by extension the Slayer Society, wouldn't wait. Pinching the wax seal between his hands, he snapped the seal in two. With a deep breath, he unfolded the parchment and began to read.
Slayer, you are hereby ordered to report immediately to London headquarters to debrief society elders on your recent activities and the results of your current assignment in Santa Carla, California, in the United States. All travel arrangements have been made and are enclosed herewith. You should know in preface to your journey here that your solo mission in Santa Carla was merely a part of your purification over the last year, as was your assignment in New York. Slayers requiring purification face a unique experience and timeline to complete that experience, and your purification is still underway. You should also be made aware of the following. It is the Society's belief that you have failed to extinguish the vampires Vladimir Todd and Dorian, last name unknown, due to the fact that your loyalties to the Slayer Society have been wavering. Your faith in our protocol and conduct has weakened, allowing impure thoughts about vampires to enter your young and inexperienced mind, effectively poisoning you. It is our duty, as your brothers and sisters in arms, to purify you of those thoughts and eradicate those questions from your mind. When you arrive at headquarters, the last and most difficult part of your purification will begin. It will not stop until you have seen the error of your ways, and all doubts in the Slayer Society's motives have been erased.
The letter wasn't signed. It was simply stamped with the same initials that were on the wax seal. Joss folded it back up, shaking his head, his brow furrowed in a most disturbed way. He had to go, had to tell them that he was considering leaving their ranks.
It was the honorable thing to do. He had to say goodbye, no matter what their threats hinted at. A single image, a single memory tormented his thoughts upon finishing the Society's letter to him. It was a prediction of what was waiting for him in London, of what would happen to him, and he wondered how he would feel about Cyrus, Dorian, Vlad, all vampires, once the Society had had their fill of purifying him. The image playing on a loop in his horrified imagination was the haunting memory of his Uncle Abraham picking up a whip. 21. Back to normal. When Joss reached for one of Henry's suitcases, his shoulder ached, despite the fact that he was using his good arm. His doctor had praised how quickly his healing process had been moving along, not to mention how great he'd been doing in physical therapy. But his shoulders still ached, even after 2 weeks, and he was still trying to get used to actually using that arm in everyday tasks, so he grabbed the lighter backpack instead. Helping Henry carry his bags down to the car wasn't something that he was really looking forward to. Once Henry left, things would be different, and they wouldn't be inside the safe, fun bubble of his room. Life would resume, and everything that had been an issue between his cousin and him would likely resurface. The very thought of it made Joss feel a little sad. Henry cocked a concerned eyebrow at him.
"You got it? 'Cause I can carry it if it's hurting your shoulder too much. Don't worry about it, I got it."
Gritting his teeth, Joss carried the backpack out the door and down the stairs. He only had to rest for a moment before he and Henry lugged the bags out the side door. He thought for a moment, as they moved across the lawn to the awaiting car in the driveway, that the pain was getting too much for him. But with a deep breath, he managed to push through and set the bag down beside the car's trunk. Big Mike grinned from where he was standing by the driver's side door.
"Look at you, Jossie boy! Getting around just fine, considering your little accident."
"Yeah, I'm getting around all right now. It's a good thing Henry was there to save me."
He and Henry exchanged a quick, knowing glance before he turned his attention back to his uncle.
"Did you have a good trip?"
"A long one. Made longer by the two cackling hens over there."
He nodded to the passenger side where Joss's Aunt Matilda was still climbing out of the car. She shook her head laughing, and when she spoke, it was in a berating tone, one that was so familiar between the two of them.
"Mike, you just hush now. We hardly talked the whole way. You should consider yourself lucky."
"He's just teasing, Matilda. I'm sure Mike just loves the lyrical sound of our voices."
The voice sounded familiar, and when Joss saw her climb out of the car after Matilda, his heart paused for a moment, not because of who she was, but because of who she was to Vlad. Nellie smiled at Big Mike, despite the fact that he started making clucking noises and flapping his elbows like wings in jest at the two of them. Joss swallowed hard and dotted his eyes around, looking for a way out of this moment. The last time he'd seen Nellie was the night that he tried to kill her nephew. Talk about an awkward reunion. Matilda moved swiftly around the car, lightly smacking the back of Big Mike's head, on her way to Joss. She hugged him tightly in greeting.
"Joss McMillan, I swear you get taller and better looking every time I see you. I bet the girls are just chasing you all over the place."
Henry leaned closer and spoke to Joss under his breath, a smirk pulling up the left corner of his mouth.
"Yeah, mostly around the woods, with weapons in hand."
Matilda shot Henry a questioning glance.
"What are you muttering about, Henry?"
Henry's eyes widened.
"Nothing, Mom."
Matilda smiled, giving him a hug, too.
"That's right, nothing. Now come tell me about your summer while I help your aunt get some snacks and sandwiches ready for the ride home."
"As time with Joss goes," Henry smiled at his cousin, and Joss saw a glimpse of what their future might be.
Friendly, peaceful, normal.
"It was pretty uneventful."
Joss's mom, Henry, and Matilda made their way back into the house then, leaving Joss's dad, Uncle Mike, Nellie, and Joss alone by the car. Once they'd gone, Big Mike and Joss's dad started talking about gas mileage, which almost bored Joss into an instantaneous coma.
Nellie, who apparently also didn't care about whether or not tire inflation affected gas mileage, smiled at Joss and said,
"How are you? Matilda told me about your accident."
It was difficult to meet her eyes, especially knowing that the last time he'd done that, hers had been full of tears over his actions, but he managed.
"I'm doing all right. My doctor has me doing physical therapy, a lot of stretching, which sucks, but they say I'm getting stronger every day."
An image flashed in his mind. Nellie putting an arm around him, comforting him after he'd staked her nephew. Nellie reaching outside of her own pain to quell his. He'd never forget the way she'd treated him that night. It was a debt that he would never be able to repay.
"That's good to hear,"
she tilted her head slightly and said.
"Vlad said for me to say hello for him."
Shock shot through Joss like ice through his veins. For a moment, he couldn't speak at all, but eventually the words came.
He did? "No, but that would have been nice, wouldn't it?"
she sighed, and then chuckled a bit as Joss visibly relaxed. Then she looked at him with her left eyebrow raised. Her words were hushed, as if she realized how fragile the situation between Joss and Vlad was. If anyone outside of the two boys understood that fragility, he supposed it was Nellie.
"Is there anything you'd like for me to pass on to him from you?"
"You can tell him..." Joss searched his thoughts for the right words. He wanted to tell Vlad that he'd been having second thoughts about the Slayer Society's rules. He wanted to tell Vlad that he'd been wrong to stake him, and that he hoped that someday Vlad might find it in his heart to forgive him. He wanted to say that he was sorry, but it was too much to say via a third party. Some things had to be said face to face, in person, directly to the person that you've hurt.
"I guess tell him I said hi."
Nellie nodded, smiling. Once Big Mike and Joss's dad had concluded their gas discussion, Big Mike turned to Joss, gesturing to Henry, who was approaching with a big red cooler in his arms, a bag of Skittles clutched between his teeth. Mike asked Joss,
"So, did you boys work out whatever issues you had between you?"
Joss smiled, glancing over at Henry.
"For the most part."
Henry sat the cooler on the ground by the trunk. As he did so, he mumbled around the bag of Skittles in his mouth.
"Yeah, for the most part."
Mike nodded, eyeing them both.
"Good, because family is important. You boys need to remember that."
"Your Uncle Mike is right." Joss's dad looked from Henry to Joss.
He then held his son's gaze, and Joss felt comforted by the weight of the words he spoke next.
"Family is everything."
Once the cooler was packed neatly inside the car and goodbye hugs were exchanged, Aunt Matilda, Big Mike, Nellie, and Henry piled into the car and drove off, hoping to make it home before the late summer storm was scheduled to hit. They wanted to get out of town to avoid it if they could. It was hard to imagine a storm coming in, as the sky was a perfect California blue, but Matilda had insisted it would be sweeping across the country any moment, so they left without any further delay. To Joss's immense surprise, as he watched his uncle back out of the driveway, a hand closed over his uninjured shoulder and gently squeezed. The hand belonged to his father. It was the first act of real affection that he'd shown Joss since the night they'd lost Cecile. Joss glanced over, meeting his dad's gaze with tear-filled eyes. It might have been a small gesture, but it meant more to Joss than anything ever had before.
"You should smile more, son. It looks good on you."
His dad's eyes shimmered as well, matching his own. Joss couldn't help but see a glimmer of hope that his family might rise from the ashes like a phoenix. Triumphant over adversity, renewed, whole, his dad smiled and gestured back to the house with a nod.
"Come on, let's go make your mother smile too."
As they walked back to the house, Joss realized that his family was doing something that he hadn't thought they were capable of. They were healing. And this life, his life, might not be perfect, but it was finally on its way back to normal.
Only not back. Forward.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Third Strike by Heather Brewer. Copyright 2014 by Heather Brewer. Performed by Alexander Sendes. Directed by Dustin Anderson. Engineered by Alex Jackson. Performance copyright 2013 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with Dial Books for Young Readers, a member of Penguin Group USA Incorporated. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.